listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Daesh is responsible for genocide against groups in areas under its control, including Yazidis, Christians, and Shia Muslims. Daesh is genocidal by self-proclamation, by ideology, and by actions, in what it says, what it believes, and what it does.
That's Secretary of State John Kerry declaring this morning that Daesh, also known as ISIS or the Islamic State, is guilty of genocide. That has been a statement that has been a long time coming, a very, very long time. We spoke recently with the president of Knights of Columbus. They put together a multi-100-page documentation of cases of genocide against Christians by ISIS. Well, at long last, after a unanimous vote by the House as well, we have the word genocide and Christian in the same sentence from the U.S. State Department. Joining us to talk about media coverage of genocide committed by the Islamic State, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here again.
Why was it so difficult to get the U.S. State Department to make this statement and use this word genocide?
Well, this is a really interesting situation. I don't think you and I have ever done this before. I now need to talk about a Get Religion piece I haven't even written yet, because this has just happened. So I'm still very much thinking this thing, processing and reading the coverage right now. But I'd like to point out something really, really interesting in a piece that's just gone live at the Washington Post about this. And there's two rather unassuming words that journalistically, I think, explain this. Let me read the paragraph to you from the story that's gone up, and I'll be quoting it in a Get Religion piece for tomorrow. This is from the Washington Post. Notice that this is all paraphrase. Kerry went to great lengths to mention atrocities committed by Islamic State fighters against a broad swath of religious and ethnic minorities, including Kurds, Shiites, and Turkmens, as well as Christians. That was because he does not want to fuel perceptions that the United States is engaged in a modern-day crusade, a so-called clash of civilizations between Muslims and Christians, comma, AIDS, plural, said. Now, AIDS said is fascinating to me. First of all, we're dealing with a paraphrase. We're not actually dealing with something from the Secretary of State, which means that the actual key to this entire story over the last couple of years, no one will talk about it on the record out front for direct quote with their names used. And the problem is that it's controversial in the current American political environment involving Islam and a host of other things to say that there is persecution of Christians, let alone genocide of Christians. That's the issue. And then a lot of other issues flow out of that, which frankly, that looks like the Washington Post story, just from being able to read about half of it. I just called it up. It appears that the other key here is refugees, because the minute you say that people are the victims of genocide, they are the victims of persecution, this has obvious implications for whether we can accept people for asylum based on religious persecution and almost certain death, which means that among the very great controversial atmosphere we're having right now on the acceptance of Muslim refugees fleeing ISIS, they now have the added complication that you're going to have the ability for Christians to apply for asylum based on this. And the simple fact of the matter is they're probably in America right now. Whether or not this is good or bad, there's a lot of arguments to go both ways on that. You're going to have a lot of people who are going to be saying, well, we should be accepting Christian refugees to the same degree or a higher degree than we're accepting Muslims.
Mm.
And that's going to create – and also, who do you think you're more likely to have people volunteer to resettle? you know, in terms of having churches and parishes and groups of that sort step forward to help resettle these refugees, et cetera. So putting the word Christian into this has really complicated it for the administration. And as people have said for years, Paul Marshall, my colleague at the Media Project, and Nina Shea, and a lot of others have written this. The simple fact of the matter is that in the current political atmosphere in America, it's hard to say that bad things are happening to Christians when your political constituency group, as the Democratic Party, doesn't get along well with large organizations of Christians other than, say, the National Council of Churches. You don't have a lot of political motivation. As someone said bluntly, persecuted Christians in other parts of the world, their problem is that they have the wrong friends. So the people who are standing up and the people who have been screaming for this genocide designation are almost completely traditional religious groups, and conservative Christian groups have been screaming for this.
You have written recently on the term bipartisan, which I agree with you completely, is a word that just is a complete fantasy in today's political atmosphere in the United States. But a vote of 393-0 is bipartisan in the House of Representatives on this very issue. What do you think was missing from the coverage of that vote, or maybe from the vote itself?
Well, I mean, the vote is certainly fascinating. I mean, and having, you know, just spent 10 years living in Washington, I have a lot of trouble turning off my cynical Washington filter on that. And one of the things that you have to hear in that is you have to picture yourself being, let's say, you're a Democrat from Kansas or Missouri or Indiana or Illinois or Wisconsin, you know, somewhere in kind of heartland, non-left coast or right coast urban areas. You're not there. You're out in the heartland. Picture yourself running for Congress and having an ad go up that shows picture after picture after picture of ISIS and murdered Christians and Libyan Orthodox people being led off to be slaughtered on a beach and all that, and it says, Congressman so-and-so said that Christians are not victims of genocide. Paid for the Republican National Congressional Committee. I mean, that's a pretty bad ad, right?
Yeah, and so, it's a real possibility, too.
Yeah, I mean, so to some degree, the zero there is a reflection of election year realities, you know, in terms of this. Then I'm also sure that there are lots of genuine human rights liberals in the Democratic caucus that are sitting there going, folks, the Knights of Columbus just documented 1,100 Christian victims of ISIS murder, and this is just the ones we can name. These are people whose names we know. Maybe we should go ahead and use the word genocide. Yeah, you think? I mean, like the Pope's using it. The Ecumenical Patriarch's using it. Everybody's using the word genocide except the United States government, the U.S. State Department primarily. I think to some degree the Democratic Congress people were sending a message to the State Department there, like, could you cut us a break on this thing? The thing in the press coverage that I thought was fascinating was the resolution got pretty good coverage. There was one group of people, though, that they didn't talk to. I couldn't find any press coverage where anybody talked to any Arab Christians. I mean, of course, yes, I plead totally guilty to being sensitive to this issue because I've just spent the last, you know, 15 or 16 years of my life being a member of Antiochian Orthodox parishes, including 4 years when I was living in West Palm Beach, Florida. I was a member of a church that was overwhelmingly Lebanese and Syrian heritage Orthodox Christians. Some of them first or second generation people out of Syria and out of Lebanon and other parts, other lands in it. These folks are really sensitive on this, as you would imagine, because it's their families. It's their bishops. As I've said before, if you're Antiochian Orthodox, your patriarch, when you write him a letter, you write him at an address that's on the street called Straight, Damascus, as in the book of Acts. these folks take these issues really seriously. I thought they would talk to some of the people who have been lobbying for the genocide term, who actually are Christians with firsthand knowledge of what's happening in that region. The Washington Post in particular, I noted, having ridden a commuter train back and forth for the last 10 years, it's not that far from Washington to Baltimore. And Baltimore is the home base for the International Orthodox Christian Charities. And it has extensive networks and contacts in Syria and in parts of that world that, I mean, they were there until ISIS drove them out. Let's put it that way, IOCC. And I'm sure they have strong contacts in that region. Wouldn't they be kind of a logical group of people for the Washington Post to talk to if they were looking for input in what this means on the ground?
It's really obvious why the Knights of Columbus are on the radar. I mean, we're talking about the largest fraternal organization, religious fraternal organization in the United
right.
States, probably worldwide. But why aren't those who have a real closer cultural, ethnic, and actually religious ties to the persecuted Christians or that sector of the persecuted Christians, why are they not on the radar?
Well, two reasons. First of all, when in doubt, the American media covers Catholics. I mean, for the simple reason that they're Catholics. There's 1.2 billion of them. And even the most religiously tone-deaf, limited knowledge editor in the world has heard of the Catholic Church and knows you're supposed to cover it. I remember years ago when I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, I thought it was fascinating that the Metro editor would approve just about anything I wanted to write about the Catholic Church in Charlotte. But wasn't that high on coverage of, say, conflicts among Southern Baptists or trends among Southern Baptists? At that time, the Charlotte Catholic Diocese was the smallest Catholic diocese in America. And Charlotte, to say that Charlotte's a rather important city in Southern Baptist life would be like one of the most radical understatements you could ever make in your life. I mean, when one of the main streets in town is called Billy Graham Boulevard, you got Baptists, okay? So why do you think they wanted me to cover Catholics instead of Baptists?
Well, I mean, it's the only, I guess, the only thing that was on their radar, the only label that was on their radar,
that's
in spite
what,
of the context.
That's what religion looks like to them. Now, then when you move to why aren't they covering the Orthodox groups, this gets us back to the fact that there are so few newspapers who have experienced, trained religion reporters who get it, who have like a basic knowledge base that would say, well, you know, the Orthodox Christians exist. There are thousands of Christian Arabs here in America. Why don't I try to find out who some of their leaders are? I think I'll call them. I'll bet they care about this resolution. The greater Detroit area, you constantly, just the other day, James Davis wrote a piece for Get Religion about this. You had this, they talked about how Bernie Sanders was doing with the Arab Muslim vote. And nobody took into account that over half of the Arabs in the greater Detroit area are Christian. It's the largest population of Christian Arabs in America. So they said he was doing well with Muslims because he won a lot of the Christian vote, because he won a lot of Arab votes. And like, it didn't register them to think, gosh, I wonder how many of those Arabs are Christians. Arab does not equal Muslim. These words are not the same. Sometimes it's just a knowledge gap.
We'll come back to that knowledge gap with Terry Mattingly. We're talking about media coverage of genocide committed by the Islamic State on this Thursday afternoon, March the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here's what Kitty in Lawrenceville, Georgia, had to say about last summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I wanted to let you know that my favorite part of this year's conference was being part of the live show of Issues, Etc. I will always remember just clapping and being a part of that show.
You can find out more about the 2016 Making the Case Conference Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th in Collinsville, Illinois at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, we're talking about media coverage of genocide committed by the Islamic State against Christians. It's been acknowledged by the U.S. State Department. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Terry, before the break, you were talking about a knowledge gap, that is, that Arab equals Muslim, and whereby we just don't see the fact that there is, at the very least, a news angle here in the U.S. on the persecution and the genocide of Christians in the Middle East. But is that knowledge gap not only prevalent with the U.S. press, but also prevalent in the American public?
Oh, certainly it is. I mean, and to some degree, we should not blame journalists any more than we should blame the public. Like I said, I was a member of St. Mary's Orthodox Parish in West Palm Beach for 4 years, and I happened to be in that parish at the time of 9/11. And let's just say that it's a very poignant thing to be a part of a predominantly Arab parish in the days after 9/11. I mean, my priest was a Syrian. The deacon was a Palestinian whose family lost everything, in the war, because his family, I think, was from Nazareth, and they had lost everything, there and come to America. These people have had complex emotions. But on the Sunday after 9/11, an Arab parish, At the end of Divine Liturgy, spontaneously, with nobody, saying they should do this or anything. In fact, they shouldn't have done this under canon law. The entire parish stood up and sang the national anthem, just belted it out. Some of these people who speak Arabic better than they speak English. But here, I was going to tell you a story related to your point. To me, one of the most agonizing stories I heard during that day was a grandmother was sitting in the coffee hour after parish, after crying, not just because of 9/11. She was crying because that week her grandchild, who was like seven, had gotten beaten up on a playground in West Palm Beach because he was an Arab, wearing his baptismal cross around his neck and with a name that explicitly outs him as a Christian, if you know anything about how Arabs name their children. And he was beaten up after 9/11 because he was an Arab. And right, and didn't the Arabs just blow up the Trade Center? So yeah, Americans don't get it. Americans don't understand that there are Christians in the Middle East, and that these Christians have been there since Pentecost. In a lot of circumstances. I'll go even further. I can get pretty riled up about this, so I apologize. Paul Marshall, in his classic book, Their Blood Cries Out, he said, you should also remember that there are Christians with a premillennial theological orientation, a dispensational orientation, that don't forget that the whole church like has to vanish in the Middle East for the second coming to occur. The Christians are kind of in the way. So to get Jesus to come back, to have the second coming occur, it would really be good if all the Christians in the Middle East kind of vanished. So maybe this is a part of God's plan to kill off all the Christians in that region.
Now, in the newsroom, and you point out a piece from the Post that was running, I think, a wire story from the AP, where the House vote is essentially depicted as all politics, kind of, the fear of that commercial running with the picture of the Christians on the beach and things like that, saying so-and-so voted against calling this, what you're seeing right here in this commercial, genocide. But that seems all the farther that that AP piece was willing to go with the House vote as well.
Well, I'm going to be It's going to be very interesting to see what the coverage looks like between now and morning. I always think it's hard to judge the media on what appears in the first couple of hours after something. So I think at this point, other than that Washington Post piece, which was written by very veteran reporters, including their religion beat specialist, I haven't had a chance to look at enough of the coverage. Just ironically, because I just came back in the door from having spoken to the local Missouri Synod Lutheran Pastors Association. So I've been away from my keyboard for a couple of hours, so I think I will withdraw on that one.
And that is indeed a very insular group itself as well.
It was a lively group.
So it sounds as though what we have going on here is a couple things. First of all, given the American context, the U.S. State Department is super sensitive about naming Christians as the object of genocide. And that's because, well, maybe from even within internal Obama administration politics, they're not thinking in those categories. And then the other thing here is in terms of the press coverage, it's too easy to miss both those who probably have the most personal stake in the story as far as a personal connection to the persecution and the genocide there, and then also just the basic political framework that the newsroom casts on everything. Everything is essentially comes down to politics.
Yeah, but you can't stress too much. They may just not know these churches exist. Or if they do, it's a highly theoretical thing. Like, oh, yeah, I've seen pictures of people marching around with crosses in Jerusalem, but that doesn't have anything to do with me here in America. And to some degree, the fact that Orthodoxy and Eastern Rite Catholic churches are not very well known here in America and don't have much of a profile, there are a lot of journalists who don't know that they, or I could even say we, exist. You know, one of my old sayings, it's hard to dial a phone number if you don't know it exists. When I was a little kid, my language arts teacher mother, I would go in there, Mom, how do you spell so-and-so? And she'd say, go look it up in the dictionary. And I would say, how do I look it up in the dictionary if I don't know how to spell it? You know, and she would laugh. But to some degree, that's the situation the press faces with this. I'm telling them that they needed to have talked to Arab Christian groups with roots in America. And the problem is a lot of those reporters don't know those groups exist, in part because our media doesn't get religion.
So now that that John Kerry has uttered the word genocide and Christian in the same sentence, as we heard him do, what should the next story written be? Given everything you've said here already, what should the next story written be?
Well, it'll be interesting to see where this is played. Currently, Kerry's announcement is not getting like out front on the website coverage. I haven't been over to CNN yet. It'll be interesting to see if CNN has placed it out front with kind of more of an international audience to some degree. Interesting to see if BBC covers this. So first of all, is the story covered? Second, the follow-up. I think the most obvious thing, if I was the editor in a major city, I would be telling reporters to find myself an Arab parish and prepare to go there on Sunday and ask them what they think. I mean, I think that would be very poignant to hit the prayers of the people section of a divine liturgy in an Arab Orthodox, you know, Antiochian Orthodox parish this weekend. I'll bet you that this is going to be mentioned. And I'll bet that in coffee hour, you wouldn't have any trouble getting people talk about what they think, what's happening to their families and to their loved ones and to this the region they once lived in. I don't think you'd have any trouble getting them to talk about it. Then the next layer is, will this affect amnesty? Will this affect whether or not Christians who are being persecuted have a chance to come to the United States and escape persecution? That's then the longer game story.
Finally, with about 30 seconds here, which do you think moved the hand of John Kerry more? Something like this voluminous 280-page document from the Knights of Columbus or the vote on the House?
Well, I think there's a connection between the two, but I think the House vote was impossible to ignore, absolutely impossible. You know, when the—but then again, you know, the Supreme Court voted 9-0 that religious organizations have a right to hire and fire based on the rights of a doctrine in the Hosanna Tabor case, but that hasn't seemed to have affected any other religious liberty cases this year. So, you know, but no, it's very hard to ignore 393 to zip.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back at Hour 2 of Issues, etc., we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We're going to devote an entire hour to our weekly series, Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Deuteronomy chapter 32 on this Thursday afternoon, finding Christ there in the retelling of the covenant near the end, where Moses is kind of wrapping everything up. We'll be right there in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.